university's Board of Trustees also signed off on the hiring of a University of Wisconsin administrator as the new chancellor of SIU's campus in Edwardsville. The Carbondale Southern Illinoisan reports the trustees voted Thursday in favor of Julie First Bow, succeeding retiring Chancellor Vaughn Vandegrift at the 14,000-student school. You can find more news at will.illinois.edu. I'm Craig Cohen, Illinois Public Media News.
Support comes from Amara Yoga and Arts, a yoga studio, art gallery, and yoga boutique in Lincoln Square, offering daily yoga classes for all ages and levels on a drop-in basis, and enrollment now for spring classes and kids art, yoga, and dance summer camps online at amarayoga.com.
High pressure will continue to dominate the weather across the nation's midsection today. Sunny skies and dry conditions are expected for most locations. However, as the high pressure drifts eastward today and shifts out of the region, a weak cold front will settle southward from the northern plains, triggering a few showers and thunderstorms across Wisconsin, Iowa, and northern Illinois this afternoon and tonight. The front will slowly sink southward over the weekend, bringing the chance of rain into central Illinois and surrounding states on Saturday and Sunday. After that, dry weather returns by early next week. High temperatures today will reach the middle to upper 70s. Overnight low temperatures will range from the middle 40s in central Wisconsin, with 50s pretty much everywhere else. The forecast for Champaign-Urbana today: sunshine the rest of the day, the high around 78, winds out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, the low 52, south winds at 5 to 10. Tomorrow, partly sunny, a very slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, with the high again near 78. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, the low again 52. And on Sunday, partly sunny, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high around 72 degrees. Sunday night's low 52. And as I said so far, no rain expected in the forecast for next week. We should see highs in the mid to upper 70s, lows in the mid 50s. Sounds pretty nice. Sounds a little bit like, well, gosh, spring. Go figure. Checking temperatures and conditions around the region at this hour. Partly cloudy skies, 73 degrees in Danville. It's clear and 72 in Decatur. Mostly cloudy skies, 75 in Galesburg, clear and 70 in Mattoon. And at Willard Airport in Champaign, 74 degrees. Winds out of the south at 13 miles per hour, gusting occasionally to 18. The relative humidity, it's low, 25%. The barometric pressure, 30.15 inches and falling. And outside our studios here in Urbana, it's 73 degrees. It's 12:40. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. In 2003, Dave Isay had what he now calls something of a crazy idea. He set up a recording booth in Grand Central Station in New York City and invited people, anyone who wanted, in fact, to interview one another about the most important moments of their lives. Today, 40,000 StoryCorps interviews are archived at the Library of Congress. Highlights are featured here on public radio, and a select few exploring motherhood have been compiled into a book called Mom, A Celebration of Mothers. It's now available in paperback. Isay tells me he never imagined StoryCorps would become the massive human service project it is today.
I didn't believe, actually, there would be broadcast content or books or anything like that coming out of these interviews, because I wrongly believed that they would start to repeat at a certain point, that there were only so many permutations of a grandparent-kid conversation that could be had. And one of the many, you know, amazing surprises and miracles of StoryCorps is that not only have the stories not repeated, they just seem to get better as time goes on.
You say there have been many amazing surprises. What has surprised you most?
I'm not sure if anything has surprised me the most. I mean, I think that what's kind of extraordinary to me is hearing from participants who have these conversations how important it has been in their lives. And, you know, I hear all the time from people who say the 40 minutes they spent in this booth are among the most important 40 minutes that they've ever spent. So that's always kind of humbling and surprising and amazing to hear. But everything about StoryCorps has been not as I expected.
As you compiled the stories for this particular book, Mom, A Celebration of Mothers, did some common themes develop?
Yeah, absolutely. The great themes of human existence are what you hear in the StoryCorps booth, which is, you know, love and children and death. These are, you know, several dozen of the most remarkable mom stories out of 40,000 interviews we've recorded. And every one of those 40,000 interviews, because of the primal relationship we have with our moms, moms have been mentioned basically in every one of those interviews. And, you know, the themes about great moms, it's about acceptance and love and honesty. You know, it's not rocket science. It's what you'd expect. But the amazing tapestry and richness of the stories that emerge out of those three themes is pretty remarkable.
No doubt you've heard all of these stories that are in this book many times, as well as many others that aren't in the book. Do you feel you understand something you didn't before about the role that mothers play in our lives?
I think what I get out of this book, and I have two young kids at home, one who's younger than one and one who's about to turn four. And in many ways, what's contained between the two covers of the book is the collected wisdom of great moms, and which is essentially the collected wisdom of great parenting. So for me, what I get are these just great lessons on how to be a strong parent. So that's more than anything what I'm left with.
You lead off the book with a story from Nancy Wright, who talks to her son about her mother.
She was critical of me and very judgment-laden. And finally, when I was about 30, we were together, and it was just a miserable weekend. I felt our relationship was awful. And I told her right before I left that I couldn't deal with that kind of criticism anymore, and it wasn't helping me. And she said that that's what mothers do. And I said I didn't need a mother anymore. I needed a friend. She was very angry and upset. And I kind of almost didn't expect to hear from her because she could be a little stubborn. It's kind of a family trait. And I think about 2 weeks, though, after that conversation, I picked up the phone one day and a kind of small voice said on the other side, hi, this is your friend. And it was. And we stayed friends until she died.
You know, I think the power of these stories is that it's the power of the poetry and the voices of regular people. And our job at StoryCorps is we take these 40-minute interviews, every one of which we treat and believe potentially can be a sacred moment in people's lives. But we boil down those that have this universal quality to their essence. And that's what I think we're doing. I think we're helping, kind of helping to pull out and shine a light on the grace and poetry and beauty in the stories of regular people when we take the time to listen.
In rereading the stories in Mom, A Celebration of Mothers, I was struck by how, by virtue of the typical ages of the mothers recorded in these conversations and these stories, how many of them spoke about the challenges they faced raising a family and working. So, for example, there was Tia Casciato-Smallwood, who spoke with her daughter, Christine, about some of the discrimination she faced in college and then in the workplace.
This miserable old man, I had him for second year accounting and business law. He said to me, Miss Casciato, you are the only woman that has ever gotten this far in my class, and I will make sure every day is a living hell for you. And he used to grade us on our class participation and how we would answer questions. And he said to me at the beginning of every class, I hope you're prepared, Miss Casciato, because the most difficult question of the period will be yours. And I would smile. I mean, this is how backward the world was.
Do you feel like these essays, particularly the ones about and featuring mothers, offer a glimpse into how society has felt about mothers and motherhood in different eras?
You know, many of these stories take place in the 60s when women are entering the workforce. And you know, I think what you get from all these StoryCorps interviews, you know, Studs Terkel, who cut the ribbon on her first StoryCorps booth and would have turned 100 next week, spoke so eloquently about bottom-up history. And I think, you know, one of the things you get from this book, kind of as an add-on, along with kind of this wisdom, is this bottom-up history of life for women, for moms at these different times in history.
Have you ever felt compelled yourself to hop into one of the StoryCorps booths and conduct a conversation and tell a story with a family member?
Yes, of course I have, yes. You know, one of the first interviews I did was with my mom. And she, you know, I'm very close to my mom. I know her very well. I talk to her all the time. I think both of us thought that it was going to just be a nice time to spend together and have a conversation. But there was not a thing she talked about over that 40 minutes, not a thing other than her name and what the date was, which is what you say at the beginning of every StoryCorps interview. There was nothing that I had known before going into that booth that I knew coming out. And again, that's kind of one of the kind of special things about the StoryCorps experience, that the fact that I guarantee you, whether you do it through StoryCorps or you kind of do one of these recordings yourself, and I hope that on Mother's Day, it's a great we at StoryCorps think it's one of the best gifts you can give, even better than this book, is to take time with your mom or remembering your mom and record one of these interviews. And I guarantee you, no matter how well you think you know her, you're going to find out things that you didn't know. And I also, the other thing I guarantee even more than that is that you would never, ever regret it.
Dave Isay is the founder of StoryCorps, and his book, Mom, A Celebration of Mothers from StoryCorps, is now available in paperback. Dave, thanks for talking with me.
Craig, good to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
And you can hear StoryCorps every Friday on Morning Edition. You can also hear many of the archived conversations anytime, as well as learn more about the book at StoryCorps.org. It's 12:48. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. The Postal Service has had another bad quarter. It said yesterday it lost more than $3 billion during the first 3 months of the year. As NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports, the post office is pushing Congress to give it more authority to cut some of its burgeoning costs.
The Postal Service's big problem is that as the volume of mail keeps declining, its costs keep going up. Mail volume decreased 4% last quarter from the same period a year ago, and in just a few months, it's due to make $11 billion in health benefits payments, which means it could run out of cash by fall and default on other payments. The Postal Service faces lots of private competition from the internet to private shipping services, but it's also limited in its ability to cut costs and compete with those services by law, even though it receives no taxpayer funding. It's now seeking approval from Congress to cut Saturday delivery, as well as some of its health benefit costs. But some of its proposed changes run into public opposition. Earlier this week, the Postal Service bowed to public pressure, agreeing to keep rural post offices open instead of shutting them down. It will shorten hours of operation instead. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
And we have more details on post office plan to cut hours and not offices. You can find that information at will.illinois.edu. Just look under local news. We also have links there to the list of post offices affected by that proposal.
This fall, visit England and Wales, locations made famous in Last of the Summer Wine, Downton Abbey, and more, including Agatha Christie's home on the coast of South Devon. Does American history suit you? Well, travel in private vintage train cars on our Civil War train. This September's itinerary includes important southern battlefields and discussions with historian Anthony Pitch. Information is at will.illinois.edu/willtravel or call 217-333-7300.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 11th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Science is the belief in the ignorance of experts." The physicist Richard Feynman, born New York City, 1918, worked on the Manhattan Project to develop the nuclear bomb. He was the youngest group leader in the project's theoretical division. He was ecstatic when the test bomb was detonated successfully in 1945, but soon the implications of the new weapon began to trouble him. He made enormous contributions to the field of quantum mechanics and electrodynamics, and he had fun doing it. Richard Feynman said, "Stuck on this carousel, my little eye can catch 1 million-year-old light, a vast pattern of which I am a part. What is the pattern or the meaning or the why? It does not do harm to the mystery to know a little more about it." It's the birthday of a State of the Union, which gave you, or at least nourished, a number of fine writers, including Robert Bly, August Wilson, John Berryman, Sinclair Lewis, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Louise Erdrich, and Bob Dylan. who said, well, in the winter, everything was still, nothing moved, 8 months of that. You can have some amazing hallucinogenic experiences doing nothing but looking out your window. Minnesota became a state on this date in 1858. It was on this date in 1997 the chess-playing supercomputer Deep Blue beat the chess champion Garry Kasparov. They had faced each other the year before. Kasparov won a five-game series. IBM came back with an upgraded computer, and this time the computer won two. Kasparov won one, and they played to a draw three times. Since then, computers have become more and more successful at beating humans on the chessboard. And it's the anniversary of the composer and songwriter who said, "My